I'm Bex and welcome to the Week Junior show. Today I'm joined by three of the team from the Week Junior, the magazine Making Sense of the World for 8 to 14 year olds. We've got Editor-in-Chief Anna.
Hello.
Writer Michael.
Hello.
And Assistant Editor of the Week Junior's monthly Science and Nature magazine, Kieran.
Hello.
This week we'll be talking about how the UK's best Formula One driver has made history, why otters are so clever, and some good news from the scientists working on ways to tackle the coronavirus. Plus, we'll have a debate all about a divisive type of architecture. But before all of that, seeing as we are talking about architecture, what is everybody's favourite looking building? Anna, you can go first.
Well, I absolutely love the Vessel Building in New York. So this is quite a new building. I think it opened for visitors last year, and it looks like a gigantic copper honeycomb. It's got 154 flights of stairs connecting 16 stories, and it stands 46 metres tall. It's absolutely incredible. It looks a bit like a spaceship. And it was designed by a British designer called Thomas Heatherwick, and he also designed the cauldron that was lit at the start of the 2012 Olympic Games in London.
Oh, I remember the cauldron, yes, and this building. I've never been there, but I've seen pictures, and it does look rather marvellous, I have to say.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible, and it's completely reflective as well, so it's quite dizzying to look at and to stand in.
Oh, brilliant stuff. Michael, what do you have to top that?
Well, I'm a big football fan, and I support Tottenham Hotspur Football Club, and my favourite-looking building is the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a fan of the club, but it was recently rebuilt and reopened last year, and it's probably the most futuristic-looking football stadium in the world. It looks like a spaceship has just landed in North London, so that would be my favourite-looking building.
Excellent. A spaceship football club. And Kieran, how about you?
Well, we've had two spaceship-type buildings there, but mine is just a ship, and it's the V&A Museum in Dundee, which opened within the past couple of years as well. And it sits on the dock of the River Tay, and the building is sort of pointed at the front, and it has these ruts coming out of the side that expand as it gets taller, and it just looks like this mighty ship jutting out into the river, getting ready to set sail. So I love that.
Wow, it sounds majestic. That sounds amazing. Mine, I don't know whether it counts. I hope it does, because I was going for the Eiffel Tower on this one. It's technically a building, right? Would I be right in saying that?
Yeah, I think you can get that.
Yeah, okay. Because it's pretty magical, and it's iconic, and it stands over Paris, and when it lights up, it looks wonderful. And I'm kind of a bit obsessed with it, to be honest. So that is the building I would pick. Even if you hadn't let me pick it, I probably would still have gone for it. We also need to find out what is everybody's favourite fact from this week. So Anna, what have you gone for?
Well, my children are both massive Marvel fans, but I think even they won't know this fact, which I found out for myself this week, which is that there's a lesser known Marvel superhero called Throg, which is a frog with the superpowers of Thor. Beat that.
You know, I feel we can all go home right now because I love that fact so much. I love just the name Throg. That's incredible. I've never heard that. Right, Michael, what do you have to top that?
Well, we're all big fans of the kakapo here at the Week Junior, which is the world's fattest species of parrot. And so my favourite fact is that the people of New Zealand, where the bird is originally from, have voted the bird as New Zealand's Bird of the Year for the second time. So I'm just happy to know that there are plenty of other kakapo fans out there.
You know, I did hear this fact this week, and I thought fondly of the Week Junior. I really did. I heard the word kakapo, and I was like, Michael and Kieran will be really happy. That's good to know. Kieran, what have you found out?
I discovered this week that scientists have realised that Gentoo penguins are actually from four different species, not one, as previously thought. So we've got three more species of penguin that we didn't know about.
Oh, I like that idea. More penguins in the world. What could possibly go wrong? So now it's time for real or rubbish. Who has got a story for me this week?
I do. So obviously there's been a lot of discussion lately about the US presidential election, but that is not the only vote that has taken place in America recently. Now, a six-month-old French bulldog called Wilburbeast has narrowly missed out on the chance to become the mayor of Rabbit Hash, which is a town in Kentucky in the US. Now, the dog ran a very strong campaign on social media in the run-up to the election with the help of his owner, Amy Noland, and actually received more than 13,000 votes. However, unfortunately for this dog, the town decided that it would be better off with a human as its mayor, and so he didn't get the job that he was after. Now, does this story sound true to you, Bex, or are we barking up the wrong tree?
Well, There's a lot of stuff to talk about here. First of all, the idea that 13,000 people voted for this dog is great and also worrying. If it's true, of course. That's the problem, isn't it? I don't know whether it's true. I don't know which bits of the story are true, which bits are false. I mean, I would quite like a dog as my mayor. How about you, Michael?
Yeah, I think, I mean, if they've got good policies, if they're willing to work hard, I'd be more than happy to vote for a dog.
And they have the ceremonial chains, I imagine.
Policies. Yes.
Policy. Well, that was very good. I feel this could be one of those things where somebody's done it as a joke and it's kind of got away from itself and suddenly everybody thinks it's really funny. And then there's one person next to them who's like, no, but I really do want to be the mayor. And it's become a bit of a bone of contention. So I'm going to have to think about this because I'm troubled by this because I feel like it's one of those things that could easily happen. But anyway, I will consider my real or rubbish dilemma. And if you're thinking about it as well, don't worry, we can find out the answer at the end of the show. So now it's time for the three big stories from this week. Anna, what is going on in the world?
Well, my story this week is the news that on the 15th of November, the British racing driver Lewis Hamilton won his seventh Formula One World Championship title. Now, this incredible achievement means that Hamilton now shares the record for winning F1 World Championships with the legendary German driver Michael Schumacher. But this isn't the only record held by Hamilton. So with a total of 94 F1 race wins to his name so far, Lewis Hamilton has also won more individual F1 races than any other driver. He was also the youngest F1 driver ever to win a world championship. He was just 23 at the time, and he was the first black driver to do so. He also holds the record for one of the fastest laps in F1 history. He drove at an average speed of more than 164 miles per hour to complete a full lap of the 3.6-mile round track at Monza in Italy in just 1 minute and 18.887 seconds. And that's not all. On the 18th of November, Hamilton was named the most influential black person in the UK. So this award isn't only in recognition of his incredible skill as a racing driver, it's also acknowledging the work he's doing to increase diversity within motor racing. He's spoken of how he's fought racism throughout his career, and he's encouraged other F1 drivers to speak out on the subject. In June of this year, Lewis Hamilton announced plans for the Hamilton Commission, which is a group with the aim of getting more young people with black backgrounds to engage with science, technology, engineering and maths. And this season, he's driven an all-black car and worn a black helmet to show his support for Black Lives Matter. After he raced over the finishing line in Turkey to seal his seventh world championship win, Hamilton said, "That is for all the kids out there who dream the impossible." He later tweeted that although he was happy to have won this race, there's still another race we've yet to win. And he encouraged everyone to do their part to create a more equal world, writing, "Let's make it so that opportunity is not something that's dependent on background or skin colour."
Absolutely. What an inspirational figure. Like, just doing the best he possibly can in every part of his life. That is quite impressive, isn't it, Anna?
Yeah, he's absolutely amazing. And, you know, he's been driving since he was really young as well. I think he started racing in karts at about the age of 8. So he's an incredibly focused and passionate person. But it's just wonderful to see somebody like him using his success to help other people.
Now, Kieran, what have you been finding out about this week?
This week, I've got some good news from the world of science about how teams of experts from around the world have been tackling the coronavirus and hopefully coming up with a vaccine that will help to save lives. So this particular week, we heard on the 16th of November that a pharmaceutical company in the UK was beginning the final phase of its coronavirus vaccine trials. And vaccines are a type of medicine that train your body to fight a disease. And many different companies from around the world are working on vaccines that could tackle the coronavirus. And the one that's entering its final phase here in the UK is the third to do so, and it's going to be tested out on 6,000 volunteers from across the country. And in around 6 to 9 months' time, the results from those trials will be in, and we will be in a clearer position to see how effective it is and whether it might work on a big scale. And excitingly, in the past couple of weeks, and even in the past couple of days, there have been really exciting news stories about other vaccines that are proving to be very effective and have been developed very quickly. So the UK government has already ordered 40 million doses of a vaccine developed by BioNTech and Pfizer in the US. And this vaccine It's 90% effective, and there are going to be 50 million doses produced in total this year and 1.3 billion by the end of next year. So that's really positive news. And another US company called Moderna has also said that its trials have been successful, and they're going to apply for approval to use the vaccine on the public within a few weeks' time. So there are lots of different options that are coming together. But a lot of these vaccines are new, they're experimental, and none of them have yet passed all of the safety tests that have to be carried out before they can be used by the public. And that's just to make sure that there aren't any unexpected side effects, that they are completely effective and safe for people to use. But this array of vaccines that are slowly coming forward, it's a sign of real remarkable scientific achievement. One expert this week was saying that scientists have never moved so quickly to develop something that could save lots of lives around the world. And it's really good to know that even during a very difficult year for a lot of people, that scientists have been steaming ahead to make sure that they can find as good a solution as quickly as possible.
It's really exciting and really hopeful, isn't it? But of course, like you say, we still have some things to check off just in case, just to double check everything's okay. But it's still wonderful that scientists have been so quick.
Absolutely. And it is testament to teamwork and to their commitment to doing it. And as you say, you know, it's vital that before anyone takes a vaccine, that it is completely checked to make sure that it is safe to use, so that when it does become available to the public, we can trust it and we know that it's safe and we know that it's going to help protect us from the coronavirus.
Now, Michael, what do you have this week?
Well, this is a fascinating story all about how otters learn brand new skills, and in particular, the Asian short-clawed otter, which is actually the smallest of the 13 otter species. Now, scientists from the University of Exeter got groups of these otters together and put see-through containers in front of them, which had meatballs inside. But to get to the meatballs and eat them, these otters had to work out how to open the container by either twisting or pulling the particular lid or handle that these containers had. And what the scientists saw was that when one otter figured out how to do it, very quickly its closest friends would then be able to solve the puzzle as well. And what this indicates is something that scientists call social learning, which is when animals can learn from each other. And we didn't know before this that this species of otter were able to do this, that they were able to learn skills from each other in this way. And what the scientists then also did, they came back a few months later to run the trial again and see whether or not the otters could remember how to do it, to test their long-term memory. And what they found out was that actually the second time around, they were much quicker at solving the puzzle. I think it was 69% faster the second time around, which suggests that they actually have quite good long-term memory and they could remember the details of how each puzzle worked. And actually this study was the first to show that this species of otter had social learning and had this good long-term memory. And the reason why this is important, beyond just teaching us more about these otters, is that actually it could help these otters to survive, because their population numbers in the wild have actually been declining, been going down recently, because their food sources have been reduced. They eat a lot of small fish, and overfishing and pollution has meant there's been a big reduction in the food that these otters eat. However, what these studies have shown is that actually these otters are able to find new food in new ways, pass that knowledge on to their friends, and then remember it into the future if they ever need to recall that knowledge and use those skills again. So actually, just as well as being interesting, this could have really important applications in the future to help conservationists better protect these otters. So a really interesting discovery, but a really important one as well.
Yeah, who knew that giving otters some puzzles would give so many big results? That's incredible.
Exactly, yeah. You know, if you put a meatball inside a container, you know, meatballs are one of my favourite foods. And so certainly I like the fact that that's kind of the key to unlocking this secret. You put something as delicious as a meatball in front of them and you found out all this amazing information.
Well, Michael, we know now how to get you to do even more work at the Week Junior. Just give you some meatballs. There you go.
Yeah.
Now, this week, we wanted to give a shout out to Jeremy Lynch. He is one half of the freestyle football duo, the F2. He's been working with Cartoon Network on the CN Buddy Network campaign to offer advice for how to be kind to others during Anti-Bullying Week.
I'm calling on kids across the UK to speak up against bullying, whether it's happening to you or someone else. I want young people to understand that you never need to be alone. If you're being impacted by bullying, there's always someone to turn to.
And the Week Junior writer Hugh asked him what made him feel happy, and a question that was once a big debate. Is Marmite yuck or yum?
What makes me feel happy is using my life as a force for good, trying my best to have a positive impact on others, and to help others to feel good and to feel happy. That's what makes me feel happy. And as for Marmite, it's a yuck from me. I know there's going to be some unhappy listeners, but I just can't control my taste buds and they don't like Marmite.
Right, now this week we're asking in our big debate if brutalist buildings are awesome. So who can tell me a bit more?
I can. Brutalism is a type of architecture that became particularly popular in the 1950s. And architecture is the term that's used to describe the design of buildings and the style in which they're made. So brutalism is a style that's really easy to recognise. It uses lots of concrete, and there are examples across the UK. So the National Theatre in London, the New Street Signal Block in Birmingham and Clifton Cathedral in Bristol are all examples of brutalism. They tend to have lots of sharp angles, there's lots of squares and rectangles and cubes. And brutalist buildings can provoke a really strong reaction in people. Some people think that the style is quite unattractive, it's quite unpleasant to look at, and has even been described as a cult of ugliness.
Wow, what a phrase. Okay, so this is going to be Anna versus Michael. Do you guys both have timers or clocks nearby?
Yep.
Excellent stuff. I have to ask it just in case. So you guys both have 1 minute each. First up is Anna. She is going to say why brutalist buildings are awesome. Yep. Anna, when you're ready, take it away.
If all buildings look the same, the world would be a boring place. Brutalist buildings are brave, unique, and form wonderful shapes that demand to be looked at. The Barbican Centre, a famous brutalist building in London, was described by the Queen as one of the modern wonders of the world. And Portsmouth Tricon Centre, which was so hated that it was demolished in 2004, was once called a symphony in concrete. When these buildings were constructed, they were seen as futuristic. With jagged edges and symmetrical lines, high-rise towers and soaring walls of concrete, they are both striking and functional. They were completely unlike the buildings that had come before. Many of them combined homes, shops and leisure complexes, offering a new way of living that expanded the limits of what people thought the purpose of buildings should be. Brutalism broke new ground and inspired architects. Some of the country's most important buildings are brutalist designs. We should celebrate their place in UK culture and make efforts to preserve them. After all, bold is beautiful.
Oh, well under time, and what a lovely way to end it. That was ending on a little catchphrase there is perfect. So, Michael, it's your turn now to argue against Anna. Whenever you're ready, go for it.
Well, I would invite anybody listening to this podcast to look up a picture of a brutalist building, maybe even in their latest copy of The Week Junior, because if they do so, they will see that these buildings are not awesome. They are awful. They are an absolute assault on the eyeballs, and they just don't fit in with their surroundings. You know, buildings should highlight the local area, complement it, make it look better, but these just take over and distract from everything else. And particularly at this time of year when the days are shorter, the nights are longer, the weather's colder, we're getting into winter, there's not much sunlight, and these huge grey dark concrete buildings just block out the sun, block out everything, and they just make people feel less happy and less enthusiastic. And they might have been radical and interesting when they were first built, but now they just look dated and old-fashioned. And when there's so many incredible types of architecture out there, so many brilliant, beautiful, colourful ways to make buildings, why make brutalist buildings? Make buildings beautiful, not brutal.
Oh, that was tricky to say, but I appreciated you saying it. So Michael was arguing against them, Anna was for them. Kieran, what do you reckon?
Bex, this is really hard. I was looking at images exactly as Michael said all morning, trying to work out whether I liked them or disliked them. And I think I'm going to have to agree with Michael. I think just because they're so imposing, they sort of overshadow the area where they are. Anna, I'm sorry to do this to you, but I'm going to say brutalist buildings are not awesome.
You've betrayed me, Kieran. You've betrayed me.
Well, don't worry, Anna, because I'm gonna go on Anna's side here, because although I don't think they're the most beautiful buildings, I think some of them are the most impressive, and I have a soft spot for brutalist buildings. There's something about them that a lot of them are really amazing. So I'm gonna side with Anna on this one, actually, Kieran. So it's we've split 50-50, I guess, on the podcast. Listeners, let us know what you think by responding to the poll right now. Go to theweekjunior.co.uk/polls or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk with a video clip explaining which side of the debate you support and why. We could play out on next week's show. Last week, we debated on the podcast whether it's too early to put up your Christmas lights, and it was very close. It was 55% of you who said it was too early, while 45% of you wanted to turn the lights on already. So here's some of your comments.
So Noah emailed us to say, "Don't get me wrong, I love Christmas lights. They look really pretty. But even though it's been a tricky year, I think it's a bit too early for them. They're not good for the environment and the cost is quite expensive." Nadia, age 10, added, "I think it is never too early to switch Christmas lights on, but they should try to be solar-powered and eco-friendly."
Alfie, aged 9, emailed us with his thoughts. He said, "I think that we should put Christmas lights up early. My family usually only puts decorations up a couple of days before the 25th, but as we can't go out as much, we won't get the chance to see them elsewhere. Also, they bring happiness and joy, which is what we all need right now."
Over on Pop Jam, a few listeners told us that it was just too early. One commented, "Different houses have different ideas. Personally, I think all Christmas decorations should go up on the 1st of December." And another posted, "If we do it now, Christmas won't feel special anymore."
Oh, lots of thoughts on that one. So remember, this is your chance to get involved on the podcast. If you grab a grown-up and record a video telling us what you think of this week's debate, then send it in to us at hello@theweekjunior.co.uk. We could play it out on next week's show. So before we get to our real or rubbish reveal, Anna, I hear you've got a new campaign you want to talk to us about.
Yes, that's right. So this week is actually the fifth birthday of The Week Junior. We first published our The Week Junior 5 years ago, exactly. And to celebrate our birthday, we're partnering with the charity Action for Children to encourage young people to spread a little happiness this Christmas by doing something kind for others. The campaign's called 12 Days of Kindness. We're launching it in this week's issue with a lovely poster with lots of ideas on it for things that you can do to make other people happier. So you can find out more about that in this week's issue, or just go to theweekjunior.co.uk/12 Days of Kindness to find out more.
Oh, lovely stuff. Anything to be kind, I am on board with. Now it's time for the real or rubbish story. Michael, can you remind me of the story again, please?
So this was the story that a six-month-old French bulldog called Wilbur Beast had narrowly missed out on the chance to become the mayor of Rabbit Hash, a town in Kentucky in the US.
Now, I didn't pick up on this before, but the dog is called Wilbur Beast.
Is indeed.
And Rabbit Hash, did you say as well, the town?
Yeah.
Now that's made it even worse for me, because I don't know whether you've just made up those names, because they are ridiculous, but also they fit so well with the story. Is it a case of your good writing, or is it a case of the world colliding to make a good story? I'm going to say it's real. I'm going to say we're living in crazy times. I think a dog wants to be a mayor. I'm going to say it's a real story.
Drumroll, please. So it's rubbish, but it's rubbish because the dog won.
No, really?
And in fact, every mayor of this town going back, I think, to 1988 has been a dog. This is what they do. They elect dogs as their mayor. Wilbur Beast is just the latest in a long line of canine politicians.
Oh my goodness. I'm kind of glad, because as I said it out loud, it seemed ridiculous, but I just... Sorry, that's really thrown me. So that every year they have a dog mare.
Yeah, it's what they do.
It's what they do. Well, hey, you know what? Who are we to comment on that? What a good story. Thank you that one, Michael. That has really... I'll be thinking about that all day. Right, that is it for the Week Junior show this week. So goodbye to Anna.
Bye.
To Michael.
Goodbye.
And to Kieran.
Goodbye.
Drop us a comment on Pop Jam at The Week Junior, or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk if you want to get in touch. And don't forget to rate, review and subscribe wherever it is you get your podcasts. Bye!
If you want to get your hands on a copy of the Week Junior magazine, we're offering a 6-week free trial. To get yours, head over to dennismags.co.uk/theweekjunior and use the code PODCAST.